Up next, Patti Smith describes her chance meeting with photographer Robert Mapplethorpe and how they helped each other find their voices as they explored the art scene in the 1960s and 70s. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC is supported by Servalis, providing SAS-70 certified high availability data centers for disaster recovery, co-location, and managed hosting with a new Northern New Jersey location. Information at 1-866-602-2020. Columbia University School of Continuing Education, hosting a graduate program fair for its professional master's programs on January 28th from 5 to 8 p.m. RSVP and information online at ce.columbia.edu/WNYC. Time stands still. The new Broadway play by Donald Margulies, starring Laura Linney, Eric Bogosian, Brian Darcy James, and Alicia Silverstone. Daniel Sullivan directs, now playing through March 21st. More information at ManhattanTheaterClub.com.
Cellist Wendy Sutter and composer Philip Glass on New Sounds.
Philip sent me a lot of poetry.
It says songs and poems, but it's basically a big love song.
I wasn't going to tell you that, but she's told
me. I just spilled it out on air.
So there it is.
Intimate and revealing interviews, hand-picked music from classical to folk and jazz. Join me, John Schaefer, for New Sounds every night at 11 at 93.9 FM WNYC.
Jesus died for somebody's sins, but not mine. Milton, pot of thieves, wild cord of my sleeve.
Sweet, charming, beautiful, and tenderly evocative are not words that are often used in conjunction with punk rock or S&M, but that's how reviewers have been describing Patti Smith's new memoir, which deals a lot with those subjects. It's called Just Kids, and it tells the story of Miss Smith's 22-year relationship with the controversial photographer Robert Mapplethorpe from their days as young aspiring artists in 1967 New York until his death from AIDS in 1989. The book is just out from Echo, and I'm very pleased that it has brought the godmother of punk back to our show today. Hi.
Hi.
In an afterword, you write that you promised Robert before he died that you would tell the story one day. Why did you have to be the one who told the story?
Well, I'm the only one who knows it. I met Robert when we were both 20, unknown, awkward, inexperienced, both of us quite poor. So each of us, held the magic and the memory of our early days within us. So I am the harborer of the story.
Do you think people have generally misunderstood your relationship?
I don't think it's just, it's not even misunderstood. People have just projected a whole other aura. There is a plethora of fabrications, presumptions, just many untruths written and rewritten. And really, I think part of the problem is that people never factor in that we were so young when we met. We were only 20. And I think that people imagine the way that we were when we were 30. Mm-hmm. And achieving some kind of recognition was the same as when we were 20. And I really wanted people to get a better picture of the youth and magic, just being young.
Well, events in this book, some of them took place 40 years ago, but you've written about them in such precise detail, down to what you were wearing and what you ate. Did you write everything down at the time?
I was quite a diarist. So I have a lot of diaries from that period. I mean, with little notations like, cut Robert's hair like a rockabilly star. the moon was full, where we went, sometimes what we ate, how much money that we had, where my $65 a week would be allotted to that I made at Scribner's. I kept a lot of journals, Robert's letters to me. So I had a rich source of information.
You were working at Scribner's Bookstore
for some years,
but
five.
Let's go back a bit. How did you meet Robert Mapplethorpe?
I met Robert because I left South Jersey and struck out in New York when I was 20 looking for a job.
You'd had a baby out of wedlock, and you gave it up for adoption. Is that the reason you left, or was it because a career as an artist?
No, I left looking for employment because I wanted to start my life over. I needed a job. There was no work in South Jersey, very little work in Philadelphia, and I thought that there would be more opportunities for employment in New York City.
And Robert had come to study at Pratt?
Robert was a student at Pratt, and he had a scholarship, an ROTC scholarship. He came from a Catholic military family. He shed his scholarship, and he no longer wanted to be part of the ROTC. So he was sort of drifting about, figuring out his next move. I was drifting about New York City, looking for a job.
You were homeless, you say.
Well, yes. I had nowhere to live. I had no money, no job. So I did what I had to do until I got my feet on the ground. But New York was a very welcoming city. It was welcoming to a young kid without any money. It was pretty safe. The subways were safe. You could sleep on the subway. There was a lot of opportunity for a job and a lot of cheap apartments.
So how did you actually meet Robert?
Well, I went to the Pratt area because I knew some kids at Pratt and who went to my high school. I thought perhaps they could give me a night or two of shelter, but they had moved, and I was directed into a back room where the boy in the back room might know where they were. And I went in the back room, and there was a boy sleeping and with masses of dark curly hair. And he awoke as I entered the room and looked at me and smiled. And that is my first memory of Robert.
And then you met him again at Brentano's.
Yes.
Where you were working at the time.
Yes, we were both working at Brentano's up in downtown. Mm-hmm. And Robert came in and he purchased a necklace, a very old Persian necklace that I liked very much. And that was the second time I met him. And the third time I met him, I was on a date. You could call it a date. I had accepted a dinner invitation with an older man who was probably all of 30, but he seemed like a older man to me. And I was very hungry, and so I accepted the date. But after the date, I got very worried about what was going to happen after. And we were sitting in Tompkins Square Park, and he asked me to come up to his apartment for a drink. And I was quite frightened about what to do, just inexperienced with how to handle such a situation. And along came this boy who subsequently rescued me, and that was Robert.
And when did he invite you? I guess he invited you to live in his apartment.
He didn't have an apartment.
So how did you come to live together?
We found a place. We just... I feel like I'm recounting the whole book to you, Leonard.
Well,
I'm sorry.
We won't do everything. Okay, it doesn't matter.
Sorry, no, I'm just trying to go back. Robert had nowhere to live, just as I had nowhere to live. He was staying with some friends.
And here you are, practically the same exact age, aren't you? Just a couple of months apart?
A month apart. 2 months apart, yes. He was born November 4th, 1946, and I was born December 30th, 1946. We were the same age, very, very similar. Both of us very slim, dreamy, devoted to art, with a sense of humor, and both of us penniless, so we were a good match.
Because Mapplethorpe was famously gay, people sometimes say that you were roommates, but it's clear from this memoir that you were a lot more than that. Is it important to you that people understand that your relationship was also a romantic one?
Well, it's not that it's important, it's just so. He was my boyfriend when I was 20. Robert had not fully dealt with his inner nature.
I mean, was gay?
No, never. I mean, he was a perfect boyfriend in every way, and there was no reason for me to comprehend that he was having conflicts. And really, he was so young. For a while, these conflicts were not the strongest part of his inner life. But as they got stronger and stronger, of course, we had to, you know, he had to reveal these to me, and we had to deal with them. And, of course, it was painful for both of us.
Well, both of you became artists. What was he studying at Pratt, and did you have... at that point, did you have any desire to become an artist as well?
Well, I always wanted to be an artist since I was quite young, a writer, an artist. But I wasn't so confident in my abilities as Robert was of his. Robert was quite gifted and very sure of his abilities. And this confidence, he really did his best to instill in me as well.
Was he doing photography?
No, Robert didn't start taking photographs till around the middle of 1970, and I met him in 1967. Mm. So he was doing collages and drawings and designing installations.
And you were working at a bookstore at the same time he was working as a window dresser at FAO Schwartz. You encouraged him to quit and to work full-time on his art, which would mean that you were the breadwinner of the household.
Yeah. But I didn't have a problem with that. I mean, I was used to working. I worked my way through college for the 2.5 years I went. I had worked at whether babysitting or in factories since I was 15 years old. I liked my job at Scribner's Bookstore, and I felt very lucky to have it. And I really felt that Robert was so fully formed as an artist and really needed... I thought that the little bit of money he made at FAO Schwartz, which was probably about $50 a week, was not worth him exhausting himself as a human being.
We have to take a little break. By the way, there's no way we're going to tell this whole story. We don't have enough time. Patti Smith is here to talk about her memoir called Just Kids. It is published by Echo. We'll be back after this.
Late afternoon, dreaming hotel. We just had to quarrel, sent you away. I was looking for you. Are you gone,
We're back with Patti Smith, the writer, performer, and visual artist. She's written a memoir called Just Kids about the years she was, in one way or another, involved in a relationship with Robert Mapplethorpe. It is published by Echo. So there you are, living in Brooklyn, and then you decided to leave him. He went off to San Francisco at a certain point?
Well, the book... accounts the long struggle that Robert and I had in dealing with the surfacing of Robert's greater nature. So,
which is not just being gay?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that's what I'm speaking about. I mean, he already knew that he was an artist, so that was no wrestling. That was no there was no conflict there.
But much of his artistic vision later involves S&M.
Yes, but we're talking about, you know, you're leaping from 1969 to 75. I mean, the reason that I wrote this book is so that people could see, could understand and comprehend the evolution of his work and the seriousness of his work and also his full engagement in the work that he's doing. And as a young man in 1969, still trying to focus on his identity, he hadn't as yet started taking photographs or engaged in those particular photographs.
He went to San Francisco. You went to Paris.
Yes.
So I guess you were also searching for something. Or else just had the opportunity to live in a wonderful city.
Well, we're always searching for something, you know. I mean, I think we were both trying to figure out who we were and what we wanted to do and how we would continue our life and what we both came out with in the summer of 1969 was we wanted to stay together. We wanted to give it another chance. And so we did, and we went to the Chelsea Hotel and started a new life.
And why the Chelsea Hotel? There were two hotels, I guess, for artists at that time, the Chelsea and the Gramercy.
We didn't know about the Gramercy. Also, the Albert Hotel, I think, was in existence.
Which had all the steak you could eat for, for a very small amount of money, if I remember correctly.
The reason that we chose the Chelsea is someone had told me that it was possible to barter your art for rent. And since we had no money and both of us had very strong work in our portfolios, I thought that perhaps Mr. Bard at the Chelsea Hotel would accept our work in lieu of rent. He didn't do that, but he did give me an opportunity to go back up to Scribner's and get a little advance and give us a start.
You write that it was like a doll's house in the Twilight Zone.
Yes. Well, because it had so many, like a Victorian dollhouse, it had so many rooms, and each one like a treasure box, as people, you know, Arthur C. Clarke might, you know, exit a room. You look at one room, and that's where Dylan Thomas wrote his last poems. Another room where Bob Dylan had written Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands. Another room Salvador Dali was staying in. Another room Janis Joplin was staying in. It was a very exciting time, and there were such interesting people. And we were all sort of kin. You know, there wasn't such a strong celebrity culture. Everybody was, you know, we were all, you know, exploring our cultural voice, so to speak.
And this gave you an opportunity to meet all of those people,
yes.
Along with William Burroughs, Harry Smith.
Yes.
Didn't Allen Ginsberg try to pick you up because he thought you were a boy?
Yes, he did. Well, in his defense, I had sort of a Mayakovsky cap on and a long overcoat, so he probably couldn't tell. But it was a humorous beginning to our long friendship.
I was... I can't say friends, but an acquaintance of Janis Joplin's. And so I remember that all the bands used to stop at the Chelsea when they were in New York City. Did you imagine yourself as being one of their ranks at that point?
No, of course not. It wasn't that. It's just that no one felt that far away. I mean, we were of a similar rank in that we were all part of a similar generation. You know, they were the spokesman for my generation, but they didn't seem so inaccessible. And you know, I got to know some of them, and some I collided with, but it was quite a time.
In fact, it was an odd time in that there were some places where you could meet anybody you might want to meet, because if you were an artist, you went to the Cedar Bar.
Yes.
If you were interested in the pop culture of one sort or another, you were more likely to go to Max's Kansas City.
Exactly, yes. It's so. I mean,
that's
I
not
went
the
to
case
the,
anymore.
I went to the Cedar Bar once with Bobby Newworth and saw de Kooning sitting there, you know, just as one would imagine. One of our greatest abstract expressionists sitting there, you know, having a drink. And but it was like that. That there were real cultural meeting grounds.
Do you think it's a loss that we don't have that kind of place anymore?
Well, there's different places. You know, I can't really judge for new generations, because the new generation might speak of their special places where they have a whole other culture. So I can only be happy that I had my time.
You moved out of the Chelsea, moved down the block, started dating other people. including Sam Shepard, who has his own memoir. No, it's a novel out now, right? Which kind
yes,
of a memoir?
It's a book of journal entries that are strung together, sort of like a necklace. So each bead is a part of the whole. It's a beautiful book.
Robert began hustling around this time. Was it because he couldn't find another way to make money, or was he just fascinated with that world?
Well, it was very difficult to make a living, and it was one of the ways that he made a living. I mean, he also tried to sell his work. He moved pianos. He moved people's art. He did what he could, you know. There were a lot of young people looking for work, and not for someone that didn't have any specific technical education, it got harder and harder to find a job.
But things changed for him when he met Sam Wagstaff.
Yes.
He was the patron who changed everything.
Well, I mean, Sam Wagstaff believed in Robert, and he gave Robert the opportunity to realize a lot of work that he couldn't because he didn't have enough money. So really, Sam was a very important patron because he helped, as I said, Robert realize constructions or larger prints or special framing that neither one of Robert and I could afford.
But this is around the time that both of your careers started taking off.
No.
It was mostly...
Neither one of our careers were taking off then. It was only... We didn't have a career. In 1972, either Robert or I had a career.
Well, when did it start happening? When did you go from writing poetry to fronting a rock band?
Gradually, through the early 70s into... I recorded Horses in 1975. Mm-hmm. So...
And Robert gave you the picture for the cover, didn't
Robert
he?
Took the photograph, yes.
You were wearing a white shirt, and you have a jacket slung over your shoulder, and that, for some people, that will always be the image of Patti Smith.
Well, it's not far. I still dress like that. And if it's, you know, a nice day, I'll take my jacket and sling it over my shoulder, Frank Sinatra style.
Was he already becoming well-known by that time?
No. I mean, the trajectory of Robert's fame was slow. And in 1975, I was still working at the Strand in 1975. You know, we weren't, Horses gave a certain amount of critical acclaim, but we were still struggling along. And Robert was starting to have exhibits and showing his work, but selling very slowly. Robert didn't really get a full sense of his burgeoning fame till the end of his life.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem that way, I guess, because he became so famous.
Well, exactly. And again, that's why I wrote this book, is people get the misconception that both Robert and I had all the fame and all the fortune that we had later in life, our whole life. And that's not how it was at all. I think it's important that people get a sense of struggle.
And we have no time, but
okay.
When did you learn that he died?
Well, when he died.
I mean, were you... Okay, I can't say any more because I have to tell people that you'll be speaking with Catherine Lamfer and reading from your memoir tonight at 7 o'clock at the Union Square Barnes & Noble store, and then this Thursday with Sam Shepard at the 92nd Street Y at 8 o'clock. For tickets and more information, go to our show page. Thanks so much.
Thank you.